Who cares about this stupid election? We all know it doesn't matter who gets elected president of Carver. Do you really think it's going to change anything around here? Make one single person smarter, or happier, or nicer? The only person it does matter to is the one who gets elected. The same pathetic charade happens every year, and everyone makes the same pathetic promises just so they can put it on their transcripts to get into college. So vote for me, because I don't even want to go to college, and I don't care. And as president, I won't do anything. The only promise I will make is that, if elected, I will immediately dismantle the student government so that none of us will ever have to sit through one of these stupid assemblies again!
Welcome to Trilogy in Theory. My name is Webb, and this is my co-host, Mike, and we are talking yet another cult classic, the 1999 Alexander Payne sophomore effort, Election.
Yes. Citizen Ruth was the abortion comedy with Laura Dern. I'm sure you remember that, Webb, from your childhood.
Never saw it, which is weird, because there's three Alexander Payne films I haven't seen. One is Downsizing. I don't know if I will ever get to that one.
Yeah.
Citizen Ruth is another. And the other one is about Schmidt. I have not seen that one. And I think I really ought to.
I would have called Nebraska. That was going to be my guess if you had allowed it. About Schmidt. I Webb that's a Webb joint. I really do. I think that is a Webb movie.
It looks like it, and I will get to it because I think I'm totally high right now on Alexander Payne, as I almost always am. But I saw Election a few months ago, and I thought about it. I was like, do I really need to rewatch it for this episode? And I was like, I'm going to rewatch it. I'm so glad I did. It's so, so good. But one thing I have to ask this time around, is this a feel-bad movie?
Yes. So I sort of hinted at it in last week's episode on Rushmore, because they had the MTV was pushing Wes Anderson, but this Election was like an MTV film, because it was like Paramount's like indie arm. But they really were trying to tie it to the teen audience. And I said in that episode, I'm like, well, I didn't really like, I watched it, but I didn't go back and like cherish it like I did Little Max Fisher. And I think it's because this is a movie for middle-aged schlubs masquerading as a teen comedy. Because now I enjoy it a lot more. I feared with Rushmore that I wouldn't enjoy it anymore. But I've leaned into maybe not some of the decisions that Matthew Broderick makes. Because, you know me, Webb, I care not a whit about what children are up to. So whatever the little election they're participating in, I'm not going to try to steer it one way or the other. I do not care. But yeah, this is one that I watched it about a year ago just for fun, I guess, just revisit it, no podcast. So this time around, I pulled out the DVD copy, which does not look great. And I guess it fits with the sort of ugly aesthetic that Alexander Payne goes for. Because if you listen to the commentary, 90% of it is him pointing out things that should look uglier in movies than what they do, and how he succeeded in that.
Oh, man, if I had known you had the DVD, I would have bugged you to rip me that commentary, because I was, again, it's another criterion that I just don't have, and I probably should at this point. Does Payne do enough to make Tracy and Jim those two characters sympathetic. While it is kind of a feel-bad movie and both characters are clearly in the red when it comes to morals, ethics, or both, you've got the sexual relationship that Tracy has with the Dave character. And then on that front, and then on the election side, you've got her obsessive drive for success, tearing down the posters and whatnot. With Jim, you've got the again, an affair with Linda, and then throwing away those votes at the end, and just the little things he does here and there. So, but are they sympathetic enough? Did you find yourself caring about either of them, like wanting either of them to succeed over the other? Maybe a rooting interest? Do you have a rooting interest?
I mean, the closest approximation to me as a high school student would have been the sister character of Tammy, who, you know, would say, don't vote for anybody. Like, just go full, I guess, Joker, just tear the system down, the student body at least.
Spoken like somebody who's never been in a student election.
So that's kind of, I don't know if I've told this story on this podcast before, but I actually, someone got kicked out in my high school off the student council. And I don't remember what the controversy was because I was, you know, Webb and I apparently would not have hung out in high school because I was very much with the Dazed and Confused characters as far as like I didn't know what was going on at all and didn't care. But I got sort of like tapped on the shoulder, like, you know, you'd be a good replacement. You know, it'd be like a different voice. So maybe I was replacing a Tracy Flick who got like that taste of power and went too far. And they're like, get somebody who doesn't care, who's just going to like just sit around and tell some jokes. I didn't have fun with it. I did not enjoy that proximity to power in high school. I think to answer your question, yes, I think they're sympathetic in that you get just enough of a taste on why they desire these kind of off-putting and troublesome things. So Tracy Flick, as played by Reese Witherspoon, it's just off-putting because it just seems like she has to have everything. She doesn't have any sort of social connections, and there's one little brief moment towards the end of the film where she's looking at the Chris Klein character, and she kind of wonders, she's like, I don't know if this is ever going to happen for me. Like, am I ever going to have friends, or, you know, am I just going to be in servitude for people who I don't care for and they don't care for me? And Matthew Broderick's character, Jim McAllister, I mean, I get it when you see her jumping around for joy because she has one more notch on her belt. I get that brief bit of rage. Like, you know what? You don't get to have everything. Not everything is yours for the taking, especially when she doesn't seem to cherish the idea of competition. She, you know, that's probably the worst thing about her is if she had stuck with the beginning of the film when she finds out that Chris Klein's character has been put up to run so she's not unopposed and she signs his, his campaign to be like, yes, I will vouch for you. And yes, you will get these 500 or whatever they're trying to get for. If she had stuck like that, I think she's a far more likable character. If she's like just the ultimate competitor, but she's not. But yeah, I mean, I have sympathy for him. And I kind of go back and forth on that with Alexander Payne movies. If he's just poking fun at middle America. Now he's from Omaha. Like he goes on and on in the commentary that this and Citizen Ruth, he like knew all these places that meant something to him. These parks, places that he tried to make look as drab as possible. This is his like almost famous. This is his Cameron Crowe moment where he like loved the people involved. He loved casting actual high school students, locals, and really seemed to cherish it. So I was totally wrong on that. Like he has a sort of dry sense of humor, but I don't think he actually hates his characters. I think he's sympathetic to even Chris Klein, who's just like a mimbo. I think he's even sympathetic to him.
Very much so. He's the because he's so oblivious to everything, he's kind of the only person that's actually likable because there's no underlying hidden motive for him.
There's
right?
no gamesmanship.
Yeah.
The worst thing you can say about him is he causes this whole shenanigan by not voting for himself and having Tracy be one vote over him in the election.
Well, that would have resulted in a tie, right? And then who knows what catastrophe would have happened after that. That would have been very interesting.
Do you think if it ends up in a tie, does Matthew Broderick still try to swing it, or does he let it play out in some sort of weird runoff? I don't even know how they would go about that. But I'm sure that the little McAllister kid, the real go-getter who's like so enthusiastic about student politics, he would have had the rule book right in there. What cracks me up more now than as a teenager watching this, because I think as a teenager I just found all these characters annoying. I did not want to see Matthew Broderick get stung in the eyeball on his way to have an affair with another like dopey woman next door. I think what cracks me up now is how little regard or respect that even the teacher has from not only his peers, his home life, no, but even his students. Like, he is someone you would think up to this point with Tracy has been closer to her than he is the rest of his group. Like, he is someone that is eager to embolden his students to care about things. And the fact that he ends up dueling with Tracy Flick is just so, it's so odd that he does not see her as a kindred spirit, that he sees himself as an everyman when he's obviously not. He's a dork. He's just as dorky as her.
I've thought about that, actually. And I do wonder, like, why don't they get along? And I think it's because this. Their dynamic is ultimately doomed from the start. Jim McAllister is a teacher who's trying to shape the students' lives, right, and prepare them for life because they don't know any better. But Tracy is so confident in herself, she doesn't need his guidance or anyone's guidance. Maybe her mother, but she already knows how to adult. She believes that there is nothing this Jim character can teach her. And so that's, I think, the crux of the problem. She feels that he is useless to him. I mean, again, look at the perspectives, right? And I love this, right? In the beginning, where you have, I don't know, maybe Alexander Payne's a little like, here's my Citizen Kane. You've got Jim describing his life in the narration. He's like, oh, my life is wonderful. I get to shape my students' lives year in and year out. And I was teacher of the year this many times, the most of anyone else. And this is wonderful. Cut to Tracy's perspective, and she's like, what a repetitive and banal existence this pathetic guy has. No wonder he's miserable. I love that.
He finishes the movie, his like final thought when he's trying to pump himself up, running into her across the street in Washington, D.C., where she is, you know, working in some capacity, an internship or something. She's assisting a politician at the nation's capital, and he's like, look at her, still chasing her pathetic dreams. It's weird to see someone who's so clearly on the path to success, not only in her world, but probably as an outside observer, you'd be like, oh, she did very well for herself coming from this, you know, smallish high school in Omaha. And it tickled me so much, Webb, that I actually had to rewind that little bit of narration again, because I just got the giggles of this old man just like yelling at this young girl who has succeeded beyond probably her wildest, well, maybe not her wildest dreams, but anyone in the town's wildest dreams for her. I think the rest of the students look at her as fake, and he doesn't. He looks at her as some sort of threat to like maybe his small dreams. Everyone else, I think, just ignores her. It's just like, I think even Chris Klein's character says, that's Tracy's thing. Oh, that's just her thing. Like, you know, basically, like, let her have that. Like, that's, you know, everyone has the thing that they're good at. I'm sports, and I guess, you know, getting head from random women who I've had no conversations with. But it's so weird, that dynamic between the two. And it works far better than another 1999 film about a middle-aged man and a teenage girl that won Best Picture in American Beauty. This age is so much better, and it was so on point with this teacher having this horrible relationship with Tracy Flick. And it's so funny that Tracy's version of it is he was the pathetic one because he couldn't keep his shit together. Like, she was the more adult one in the relationship.
Do you think that Jim truly feels like he's rebounded just fine in New York? The last bit of narration and just kind of peek into his life is interesting, because you don't get to see Tracy's narration. You don't get to see her point of view at the end. You're kind of just assuming that she thinks everything is great because she's in D.C. Again, part of she's getting in a limo or something at the end, right? And so she's doing just fine. And Jim kind of wobbles right at the end where he's like, no, everything is great. But he so quickly, just the sight of her, he goes from 0 to 60 when it comes to like anger, right? So is he really happy, or is it all just like he's just telling himself? How do you feel about that?
I think he actually is happy as long as he's not reminded too much about how much bigger the world could be. Like, as long as he carves out a small space for himself, I think he can get to contentment really quickly. I don't think he's bullshitting that he likes working, like, at a museum and taking kids on field trips, being the speaker, taking them around with the stupid little flag that he has to carry. I don't think he's unhappy with this new woman that he's met, because it's pretty evident he was not in a happy marriage. Like, do we have any scenes with his married life other than him trying to impregnate her at her behest, like just for pure baby making? I don't know if there is one where it's just them conversing, or like other than maybe one running out the door.
No, I don't remember it, any of those scenes either. And there's no moment where you're like, oh, they're a couple. They're a married couple with shared interest, or at least you don't see them spending any time together. You see him spending time with Linda more so because of all the chores and whatnot.
But even that is purely domesticated.
Like, yeah.
Seduction, which is also his inability, like his inability to even have anything that's like passionate. Like, their affair starts because he's removing her hair from her shower drain. Like, it is just like Alexander Payne just always wants to like sort of muck up like reality. He even had something in the commentary, which I thought you'd really dig, the sequence where he comes home and, you know, the neighbor has admitted to his wife that's like, you know, they slipped up and they had this like one little brief physical interlude. Unfortunately, Matthew Broderick did not get to display his freshly cleaned testicles. There's a sequence where he's just like isn't fully showering, but is just splashing water. Like, Alexander Payne has a flair for visual gags, that's for certain. But on that note, that commentary, he was adamant about these small details. He didn't really get into the themes too much. His main theme of the movie, he says, is almost accidental, is that it's a man surrounded by garbage. That garbage is his undoing, because he's at the beginning of the film, he's cleaning out the fridge and he throws some Chinese food, misses the trash, and the janitor sees him just like toss it in the floor. So one more thing the janitor has to pick up and is caught by trying to throw away, you know, the two votes for Tracy in the garbage. Even the last scene in Washington, D.C. that you point out, he's throwing a Pepsi cup. He's throwing trash at Tracy's limo. But Alexander Payne made a point that the overabundance of magnets and family pictures and children's drawings on refrigerator units bothers him to no end. That was the one thing he wanted to clean. He's like, I just don't believe families put that much junk on their refrigeration. So if you get a chance, unfortunately, I looked up the commentary review from an old DVD, like, you know, maybe it was like HD Digest. And they're like, yeah, this is really dry. And I'm like, I don't know. I think Webb would really dig all this garbage talk. I think he would. If you like Election Alexander Payne, I think you'd like the commentary.
Absolutely. He doesn't do one for Sideways, because I've listened to that one. And that one's actually Thomas Hayden Church and Paul Giamatti just bullshitting for doing.
Perfect.
It's wonderful. Yeah, it's exactly what you'd hope. One thing I also love about Election, and this maybe speaks to the authenticity of the picture, because he did get locals to be a part of it, is that the only real star in the movie is Matthew Broderick. Because at the time, Reese Witherspoon had Cruel Intentions, she had Pleasantville the year prior, and she was in a movie with Jack Bauer, Freeway, Kiefer Sutherland,
yeah.
Which is an actual cult classic, by the way. And it wouldn't be another couple years, I think, until she gets Legally Blonde and then just explodes, you know, and blows up in a big way. So even her, like, she's not the part of the project that we're doing this year, best movie year ever. In the book, it says that she was able to blend in with the rest of the high school students, and when she was kind of researching and observing how to tackle this role, and nobody cared. So I love that Matthew Broderick is really like kind of the only star, and it just feels like everybody else is in that world. And with Matthew Broderick, I mean, obviously you have Ferris Bueller, but I mean, he's doing such a good job here that I really don't think about it. It was only until I read the chapter in our book where the concept of like, oh, he was this a ne'er-do-well in Ferris Bueller, and now he's the teacher. I was like, oh, it's kind of clever. I was like, yeah, I guess it is. I never thought about that. Everyone's doing such a good job in this movie.
Alexander Payne is a man after your own heart, because he admits pretty early on in the commentary that he's, at the time of the recording, and he states this, he's like, I'm going to get around to it. He admits he never watched Ferris Bueller, so he didn't really make that connection that other people were bringing to the reviews of the film. And he was just like, I just thought he'd be good for the part. You know, I wasn't commenting on a prior like iconic role. He's like, I was aware of it, but he had no experience with it. I think that probably also didn't stick out for me, because I, you know, especially with like early to mid 80s stuff, it's a little bit too ahead of my time. Like Batman 89 is my first like big childhood memory of like going to like an event movie. And then from that point on, so the end of the 80s. So I didn't have that baggage, or maybe extra comedic heft. If you enjoyed seeing Ferris Bueller gets old, it's interesting because, I remember the reason I rewatched Election about a year ago is that I read, now I've never read the source material, the novel for, Election, but two decades later, the author, is it Tom Parada? Is that how you say his name? Brought out a sequel to it called Tracy Flick Can't Win. And so I watched Election just so I could read this book, because I'm like, it'll give me a sense of it. She ends up being a teacher. Yeah. And so it's actually like, if you wanted Tracy Flick's, I guess, comeuppance in a way. Now, she's still very successful at what she's doing. She finds herself more, she's closer to Jim McAllister than she's probably comfortable with, obviously, because it's a very similar, you know, sort of setting she finds herself in. And she can't stand the fact that no one has it together like she had it together. She does not identify with, you know, the younger generation just not going for it like she did. The book's okay. I honestly think that with the sequel, it would work better as a movie, seeing Reese Witherspoon tackle the role again, that she's sort of, you know, aged, you know, with the rest of us.
And that is a story that came out like a year or so ago, that a sequel to Election could be happening. I don't know if I need it, but especially if Alexander Payne isn't involved.
We'll see if Paramount Global gets sold. You know, if their Paramount Plus needs more material to like, what IP do we own? Oh, there's a sequel to Election. Go ahead, shoot, put it on the service.
Oh my, you know it's not going to do well, especially if it's like direct to. Oh my gosh, no. I can't imagine it's going to do well. I mean, this is a big film in film circles. It's not a big film in the mainstream audience. You know, your average person has not seen Election. I just don't believe it.
Yeah. I would say, strangely, that Rushmore probably captured more of the MTV audience eventually, maybe not on initial release, but Election did 17 million at the box office. So it was not financially viable, did not have a hit. I think that if they were trying to draft off of the heat of Cruel Intentions, I don't think Tracy Flick is presenting the sexy to the teenage audience. I don't think if you're like, oh, Reese Witherspoon was a movie where the chicks make out, maybe she'll make out in this one. No, Tracy Flick is not making out with anyone. In fact, the only section she has is with the an older, creepy teacher who blubbers and cries when he's caught.
When I saw that note or that little book that he had written for her that eventually was undoing, I mean, in quotes, teacher, oh my god, like, why?
I mean, it's broad comedy and how the unraveling of that character, still probably more realistic than Kevin Spacey undressing a teenage girl that he has upended his entire life for, quit his job, started working out, smoking weed, taunting his wife, sees this teenage girl's breasts, and then is like, you know what? I just can't. I'm having a moment of crisis here. I can't do this. Like, that American Beauty is such bullshit.
I have not revisited it in, well, especially since all the allegations and all that started with Kevin Spacey.
Kevin's
so...
actually fine. He's a creep. You can dive right in.
Where does Election rank for you among Alexander Payne's work?
Well, let's just go ahead and, you know, sideways right on the top. Like, it's, there's no comparison, sideways. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. I would actually, you know, I was not a fan of Nebraska, Downsizing, no. About Schmidt has gotten a lot of play for me. Citizen Ruth, I've seen. But I think I actually watched it before Election. I think I just rented it before, you know, Alexander Payne was Alexander Payne. And I don't really remember much about it. But, you know, I think Dogma is where I'm going to go to for my abortion humor. Because it's got the poop monster and everything else. Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, holdovers we did recently. So there's a little bit too much recency bias there. Am I missing a big one or no? Because he doesn't really work that often. The Descendants.
There we go.
Yeah, it's Sideways, Descendants, about Schmidt, probably my top three. So I think Election would be underneath those.
Okay. Yeah. I'll let you know as soon as I watch About Schmidt. I might do that one, soon because I'm again, all those viewings of the holdovers in the past few months and now Election, you know, twice in the past, year. I think it's time. I think it's time. And I don't know if I'm going to ever get to Downsizing. We'll see. Or Citizen Ruth. I think that'll probably come before Downsizing.
I think it's a safe bet that Downsizing would be your least favorite by far, I think.
Because it's already the villain, like I've already painted it as the villain. Because it's like the one blip, the outlier in his filmography that even like the critics were like, this is not good. It's got a lot to come back from.
It's got one great joke in that Matt Damon turned down the Casey Affleck role in Manchester by the Sea because he was like, I always wanted to work with Alexander Payne. I'll do whatever he's doing right now. It ends up being Downsizing.
Fantastic. Oh, it was turning down Avatar and now this. You know, he can't win. He just can't win.